On the afternoon of April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. was planning to have dinner at the home of Reverend Billy Kiles, a close friend and supporter. Reverend Kiles was standing near Dr. King when he was assassinated that very afternoon. Rushing home from his junior high baseball practice to join the group for dinner was Duane Kiles, Billy's son, and your reader for this book. Duane J. Kiles is an attorney and businessman. Duane's father still actively travels the country, speaking to all kinds of groups and organizations about the life and work of Martin Luther King Jr.
Oasis Audio presents the Everything Martin Luther King Jr. book, The Struggle, The Dream, The Legacy. Written by Jessica McElrath. Duane J. Kiles reading. Introduction. Martin Luther King Jr. holds a unique place in American history. He was a controversial figure in his own time, adored by some and hated by others. His harshest critics called him an Uncle Tom, while others referred to him as militant and extremist for his views on equality, poverty, and the Vietnam War. Yet, today, his life and work is often revered and romanticized, and he is considered the civil rights movement's greatest martyr. Perhaps it is more important to look at King's own view of his legacy. King considered himself a man and a sinner. By his own admission, he was neither a saint nor a martyr. He wanted to be viewed as an ordinary man who would be remembered for his commitment to justice and righteousness. King was clearly one of the most gifted orators of his time. He is most remembered for his eloquent speech, "I Have a Dream," which he delivered at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. While King's speech aptly summed up some of his goals, his views were hardly limited to just the recitation of his dream for America. While equality was the goal, it was through the use of nonviolent resistance that King sought the ultimate objective of reconciliation between whites and blacks and the creation of a beloved community. Still, far more controversial than his dream of equality was his view on the evil of the Vietnam War and poverty. It was this later stance on the war that set him apart from many Americans and from other black leaders in the civil rights movement. At the time, his opinion was the minority rather than the majority, and his popularity suffered a chilling blow. Adding fuel to the fire, King took his crusade for equality to the economic realm. He envisioned a society where jobs and income were guaranteed for all. His new goals of peace and economic equality were met with an intensified resistance. With the emphasis on King's work in the civil rights movement, it is sometimes easily forgotten that he was a reverend with a strong faith in God. It was to this faith that King attributed his commitment to the cause of equality. King was a man who relied on the might of God to give him courage, solace, and companionship. Left to his own devices, King admits that he would have left the civil rights movement to pursue more ordinary endeavors. Recent scholarship shows that King had serious battles with more than just a desire to leave the movement. He had extramarital affairs, and it has been discovered that King was neither accurate about citing his academic work correctly nor careful to avoid plagiarism in his writings. These failings are perhaps the biggest mystery of his life. How could a man of God, America's civil rights crusader, a moral compass for right, have justified such acts of dishonesty? More than anything else, however, it is the humanness of Martin Luther King Jr. that makes his life story so fascinating. Due to the release of the FBI files on King, the extensive research done by leading King scholars, and the wealth of information from those who worked with him, the details of his life from the trivial to the personal have been uncovered. This book is the product of careful research and is intended to explore King's role in the civil rights movement, his philosophical beliefs, and the personal struggles that he faced. Chapter 1, African-American Life in the South. In order to understand why the United States became a country divided by race, it is necessary to explore the history of race relations in the South. The enslavement of blacks was the determining factor that set the stage for segregation. After the Civil War, though freedom from enslavement had been won, freedom of citizenship and equality remained unrealized. Early on, blacks and whites worked together toward the elimination of segregation laws. But it was not until the 1950s that mass protest was targeted at the system of segregation. The aftermath of slavery. The segregation in the South that existed during King's time was a direct result of America's history of enslaving its black population. After slaves were freed in 1865, the nation embarked upon a long journey toward equality for all of its citizens. From the beginning, however, white Southerners were far from ready to give up their way of life. While blacks were free, whites found it difficult to adjust to this new reality. During the early stages of Reconstruction, Southern whites temporarily gained control over local provisional governments. With this power, they set out to recreate the old ways of the South. The creation of black codes. White Southerners were mostly interested in ensuring that they had a labor force. To that end, they enacted black codes. Black codes served as a way to control the black population through the law. The laws restricted all areas of life. Blacks were denied the right to own property, were forced to work in agriculture or as a domestic. Vagrancy laws were imposed, speech was restricted, curfews were established, and the possession of firearms was prohibited. The black codes, in their harshest form, were short-lived. But after 1866, some state legislatures passed revised codes that were less severe. Fact. In the city of Opelousas, Louisiana, in order for blacks to enter the town, a note from an employer was necessary. The note had to relate such specifics as the reason for their visit and how long they intended to stay. If in town without a note, imprisonment was the penalty. The Freedmen's Bureau. In order to implement structure in the South, Congress created the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, also known as the Freedmen's Bureau. The Bureau took charge of providing food and medical services, help with settlement, management of abandoned lands, regulating labor, and establishing schools for former slaves. Education was the biggest challenge for the Bureau. They created teacher training institutions, over 1,000 schools were built, and several colleges were founded. President Andrew Johnson made the job of the Bureau especially difficult when he interfered with their efforts. When the Bureau gave 850,000 acres of abandoned land to former slaves, Johnson promptly returned the land to its Confederate owners. In 1870, partly due to inadequate funds, all of the efforts of the Bureau came to an end when it was terminated.